Okay, so we are holding on Chof Beis on the Beis. We're holding Chof Beis on the Beis second line. Okay, so we mentioned the thing. The Mishnah had talked about a case where you have a woman is where they're coming out of a woman things that are like that are red things like peels or scabs or like hairs or like dust or like red bugs. So we said you put it in water, you see whether they dissolve or not. If they dissolve, then they're blood.
She's coming.
And then she's coming, right? So that we started by discussing the question whether she's telling me if something dry, if they've dried blood comes out of her womb. So this is so we said if they don't dissolve, that's very b'fnei atzma, which you have different. Some so Rashi learns that it means very b'fnei atzma, meaning therefore it's not blood, even though it's red, it's not blood. Other Rishonim, such as the Raza and others, learn that it may mean it could
be blood
because if it's not dissolving in water, that's obviously not blood. Other Rishonim, such as the Raza, learn that what it means is even if we know that for a fact that it's blood, but because it doesn't dissolve, then therefore it's not metameh. Okay. So I'm going to ask, second line. Do you actually have such a thing that a woman miscarried, that have come out of a woman things like scabs or like hairs or whatever that are red that may or may not be blood? Kihai gavna means like this. Gavra is a man. Gavna. Kihai gavna. Kihai gavna means like this. The answer is aim. Indeed, yes, there is. V'hotanya, and thus we learn in a braise. So, Amar Rav Elazar ben Tzadik, Shnei Maisim Hela Abba Mitivin Layavna. My father, Rav Tzadik, brought up two cases from Tivin, is the name of the city where he lived, to Yavna, to ask the Chachamim what the halacha is. Number one, Maisim Be'isha Achas Shreis Mapelas Kim Klippes Adumas. There was a woman who was regularly shedding things that are like red scabs. Ubov Sholas Abba, so the people in town in Tivin came and asked Rav Tzadik, but Abba Shola Chachamim, my father in turn asked the Chachamim, the Pashtus, this is when he went to Yavna to ask them, the Chachamim Shola the Roifim, the Chachamim in turn consulted with the doctors. Okay, hold on, let's finish the story and then we'll talk about what this is, yes. But Omrulahem and the doctors told them, Ishazum Maka Yeshla Vasechmeah, this woman has an injury or whatever you want to call it, a lesion in her in her inside, pashtus meaning in her womb. Well, me'eha more generally means her inside. So most of the Mefarshim assume that it means in her womb.
No, we didn't say that.
We talked about that if there's a wound in there, then
no. But why did you come out of
that? Because the word me'eha means more generally her inside. Shemimena pelus kamin klippos. That's what's causing her to shed these scab-like things. They're coming from that injury. Tasil lamayim. She should put it in water. Imni moichu tneya. And if they dissolve, then we know. Then we know.
The doctor said
that.
Hold on.
So here you have a great deal of discussion that gets into the general question on halacha. When do we trust and when do we not trust doctors in halacha? So there's a lot of different explanations from Rishonim and Achronim. Part of it has to do with the question, with this part that we're saying over here, put it in water and see if they dissolve, is that part of what the doctors are saying, or is that what the Chachamim are saying?
I don't have such a problem with that, but
no,
that's tell me or not tell me, that's the problem.
One second. So the question is, Amru could mean the Chachamim said. It could be that, in other words, we break it up into two things. The doctors are saying a fact that she has a Maka B'Seth Me'ah. Then the Chachamim say, okay, in that case, Tafil Lamayim. Now, I mean, you also get into the question, if they're saying it comes from a wound, then why should we need to put it into water? And if it dissolves, so what? It's blood from a wound. It's blood from a wound. Why should it be an issue?
So we said the wound is not
blood. That's the question. So that's part of the question also. So there's a great deal of discussion about this. There's also, for example, one way of looking at it is maybe indeed, if it comes from a womb, it wouldn't be expected to, if it comes from a wound that's inside her, it wouldn't be expected to dissolve in the same way as if it came from natural menstrual bleeding, let's say. That's one. A wound, that's the point. So if it doesn't dissolve, then we have reason to assume it comes from a wound. That's one way of explaining it. That it comes from a lesion. Then we would have to assume that it comes from not from the wound, but rather from some other part of the uterus. And therefore, it would be tummy. So that's one part of it. Another angle on this is, b'chlal, among other things, are these doctors Jewish or not? That's another factor that they take into consideration. That doesn't mean that all the doctors are Jewish, right? Does it mean that you have to have more than one doctor? Roifim implies doctor is plural, so maybe you need to ask two of them. On top of that, you also have some achronim that talk about maybe there's a difference between, are we talking about that the doctors actually are saying this on the basis of their examination of this particular woman, then fine, you have more reason to accept what they're saying. Versus, are they saying it based on their accumulated knowledge up until now?
No,
they say ishazu. They say ishazu, but does that mean that they necessarily checked her inside? It's not like that. Maybe, maybe not. It could mean that they're saying. Then they could say, how else are they going to say it? Okay. There's most women don't have something like that, and they're in their. If it's one way of understanding it is that they're saying our hypothesis is that this woman has a makal b'seif me'el, and that would be a cause of her discharging such peel-like things. So then, according to that, there might be a difference. Maybe we can rely on that, maybe not. So I'm just saying. I mean, I'm just kind of meaning mara makam hulo. There's a great deal of discussion, pro and con, about this whole question of when we trust doctors, when we not. So not necessarily for this case over here, apparently they did accept what they said, because he said they asked the doctors and followed it. But again, that's part of the question is, did the doctors just say that she has a lesion over there, and then the Chachamim said, okay, in that case, let's check it by putting it in water, or did the doctors themselves actually say, put it in water and see if it dissolves, and that'll tell us whether indeed it comes from a lesion or not. So maybe we can accept what they're saying as far as that, maybe not. But for example, we've talked about before... But is that part of what the doctors are saying or not? That's what I'm trying to say. Maybe, maybe not. There's two ways of explaining it. Another angle on it is, for example, when we've talked about the concept of roya machnas tashmish, where a woman is bleeding triggered by tashmish. So you have a great deal of discussion in that connection also. Do we accept if a doctor says that it's not coming from the uterus, it's coming from some other part of her anatomy, would we accept that or not? Maybe, maybe not. A lot of that depends on how we parse this Gemara over here. Maybe, maybe not. So again,
one thing from this Gemara, you can say your oppositions.
That's fine, but do we always trust everything they say? And in particular, for example, did the physicians just say their hypothesis that she has a wound over there, and then the Chachamim said, okay, in that case, let's check it with water, or is it that the doctors themselves are saying that's part of it? Okay. The shuv might to be isha shayis makelus kim insiras adomus. Then Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok says there was another case of a woman who kept on shedding things like red hairs. Ubah b'sholah saba. Again, she came and asked my father. Ba'ab b'sholah hachamim. My father went and asked the hachamim. B'chamim l'roifim. The hachamim went and asked the doctors. Ba'amr l'hem. The doctor said, you know what would be causing it? Shuma yeshlo b'seich me'eha. She has a wart or a growth of some kind in her inside. Shemimena ma'pelah. Shuma is a wart, yeah. And warts often have hair on them. That's what's causing her to shed these red hair-like things. Tata l'mayim. So again, we say she should put it in water. And if they dissolve, then she's tummy. So again, there's the same way as before. What exactly are the doctors saying versus what the Chachamim are saying? And Rashi doesn't say one way or the other. Rashi doesn't explain about this one way or the other. Rashi just says im if they dissolve, then it's tummy damable because it's blood. Rashi doesn't clarify whether it means that the doctors are saying put it in water or whether it's the Chachamim are saying put it in water. In fact, the Tosfos HaRosh says over here, this is one possible explanation of it. He says it's not that the doctors knew for sure that she has a wound or she has a wart, because if they did, then even if it dissolved, it would be tahor, because after all, it's blood from a wound or a wart or whatever. The doctors said, Tosfos HaRosh says, ulai ishadu, maybe our hypothesis is that she has a lesion or she has a wart.
Can you read it?
In Tosfos HaRosh, on the side over here. Moshe ha'yaboru l'roifim sh'yalamaka b'tech me'ah. And not that they knew for sure that she has. Then even if it dissolves, it would be tahor. The doctor said, ulai, maybe she has a wound in her insides. So we can check it by putting it in water. If it dissolves, then we know it's damnida. And it doesn't come from a wound. In other words, the Tosfos of the Rosh is explaining that, first of all, that the imni moichu, that to put it in water, is part of what the doctors are saying. And second of all, that the doctors themselves are saying, we will be able to tell whether it's dam nidr, whether it's blood from a wound, by putting it in water and seeing if it dissolves. Again, that's one explanation. And you have other rishonim that explain differently. Okay. Onward. Omer shlokish. Uba poshrin.
So no conclusion.
So no, well, so there's not no conclusion. You have different ways of understanding our Gemara over here. Okay. Amar Rish Lakish, Uba Poshrin. So Rish Lakish says in this connection, when we're talking about putting the cloth or whatever it is in water to see if it dissolves, what should the water be? It should be Poshrin, it should be in lukewarm water. Number of different opinions of Rishonim exactly. That's a statement. It's a statement that you shouldn't use cold water.
You should not use cold water.
You should just use lukewarm water. Tani Nami Hachi, indeed, we learn like that in a Braisa. Tassel Lamayim, when it says put it in water, means a potion, means in warm water. Reb Shimon Gamliel, Machata Beroik Al Gabi Atzeporin. Reb Shimon Gamliel says what you have to do is put it in saliva on the fingernail and press on it and see if it dissolves. Machata, she should press on it. Beroik with saliva, let's put it on her fingernail, and Algabe Asapon on top of the fingernail, so put it on her fingernail, put a little saliva on it, and press on it and see if it dissolves. So the Gemara says, my binai, what's the underlying argument between the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel? The argument between them is, if it dissolves only because of pressure. The Tanakama would say you just put it in warm water. And therefore, if it dissolves, then we consider she's tameh, and if not, then not. Reb Shimon Gamliel goes beyond that and says that even if it dissolves as a result of pressing on it, it's also considered blood and she'd be tameh. So what do we mean by poshrin over here, by the way? You have a number of different explanations of Rishonim, what exactly, I mean, they didn't have thermometers then to be able, they didn't have a temperature scale to be able to give the exact temperature. So a few different Rishonim give different explanations. It should be, for example, I think the Rashba says it should be the temperature of water that's drawn from the river during the summer. You have a couple of different ones that I brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Ritva says, based on our Gemara over here, where the Gemara is comparing it to the Shimon Gamliel's statement about saliva, that apparently lukewarm over here means approximately the temperature of saliva as when it comes out of the mouth. So we're talking basically about body temperature, about 98.6. Okay. Fine. Okay. So the Gemara points out in a related question. Now like this, Hosam Tnan, later on in our Masechta, we learn in a Mishnah, we say over there that of sheretz or a piece of nevela are metame only when they're moist, only when they're fresh, not when they're dry. But if they're not so dry yet, they're still relatively fresh enough that if you were to soak them in water for 24 hours, they would go back to their original state, then they're still metame. So we say, kama hishriyos, then how much do you have to soak them? The poshrin, you have to soak them in warm water, mess less, for 24 hours. And if they regain their original state from that, then they're still metame. So the question is, hochamai, what would be the din over here as far as the blood? Do we have to leave it for 24 hours? Niba in a mess less, they lie. Do we need it to be for there in 24 hours and see whether it dissolves or longer or shorter? Do we say sheretz or nevela dakushi? A sheretz or nevela, which are tougher, therefore be in a mess less, maybe we need a full 24 hours to see whether they become moist enough again as a result of being in water. Aval dam the rakichloi, but blood is much softer, so maybe you don't need full 24 hours. O jumalo shno, maybe there's no difference. What's it take? We're not sure. So la halacha, we have to see if it dissolves within 24 hours.
But you don't need pressure.
You don't need pressure. According to the Shimon Gamliel, you need pressure, but we're saying you don't. You know, the halacha is you don't need that, right?
Because the halacha is
like the chacham. The halacha is right. Okay, fine. The Mishnah had said, Hamapelas kamin dogin. The Mishnah had said that suppose a woman miscarries something shaped like a fish or other creatures like that. So we have like this in the Mishnah. We started with, we had three cases in the Mishnah. One where there was a chunk of flesh, and we said the Tanakhama had said it depends whether there's blood in it or not, whether there's blood with it or not, and Rabbi Yehuda argued and said either way she's tamei, and we discussed is that does it depend on the color of it or does it depend on the question of e actual psichas akever b'leidam. Then we had the second case in the Mishnah was where she was shedding something like a peel or a hair or whatever. So then we just said it depends whether it dissolves in water or not. There Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing. So you could say, because if we say actual psichas hakeber b'leidam, those things are small and there's no psichas hakeber involved. And then we have the third case in the Mishnah where we said if she miscarries something shaped like a fish or locusts or shkotim or amotim, various small creeping or crawling creatures, if there's blood accompanying them, then she's tamei, and if she's not, she's tahor, and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't say anything over there either. So that's what we have to discuss. the Lishlag Nami Rav Yehuda Baha. Why isn't Rav Yehuda arguing in that third case?
About Sifat Kevin.
In the third case, yeah, where she miscarried something that looks like a fish, etc. Why doesn't Rav Yehuda say it depends? The Tanakama had said if there's blood with it, she's tummy, and if not, then not. Rav Yehuda should be saying, forget about whether there's blood. Either way, she should be tummy, same as he said in the first case.
Wow.
So what's the difference? Omer Ishlokish Machloikis Shinoya. So actually, Ishlokish says, yeah, the same Machloikis would apply for Abanani. This last part of the Mishnah is only a coin for Chachamim. You're right, Rabbi Yehuda actually would argue in this case as well. But once the Mishnah presented their Machloikis in the first case, then we understand it applies in all the other similar cases. Rabbi Yechanan says, no, after the Tamer of Yehuda, no, you could actually say that last part works even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Ad kam like Ka'amar Rabbi Yehuda Hossam. You know why Rabbi Yehuda says in the first case where there was a chunk, El Gabi Chaticha, only when you're talking about a piece, a chunk of flesh, the Ovid Dom, the Kodesh, because it's common enough for blood to congeal, Mahavi Chaticha, and become some kind of just random shaped chunk. So therefore, the cloth, basically. So therefore, so Rabbi Yehuda would take the view, not necessarily is this a chaticha, not necessarily is it a chunk of flesh. It may well be a cloth of blood, which just has some random shape, and therefore we should be metameho for that. Aval bria loihavi. But the blood is not going to congeal in such a way that it's going to become the shape of a fish or a locust or whatever, so then Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree that it's flesh. So says Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree with that. Okay. What about the Gemara says? Lahach lishna. Now, we have, at the beginning of the Perek, we had two lishonis. We had Shmuel saying that the machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim in our Mishnah has to do with the color of the piece, whether it's one of the four minute, whether it's one of the four colors of blood or not. And Rabbi Yochanan saying something similar, except Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan had different ways of looking when the machloikas would be. And then the Gemara, according to that first version, rejected both of them and said that no, it's a matter of actual specific temper or not. That was all the first version. So according to that first version, then this works out. We could say now it's not a question of the color anymore. Now Rabbi Yochanan would say, Rabbi Yehuda would say, no matter the color of it, it can't be a clot of blood, because a clot of blood is not going to become the shape of a fish or whatever. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to be retired. But then we have the second version over there, which is that Shmuel had said it depends on the color. Rabbi Yehuda is metame in certain cases, the Chachamim not. But and then Rabbi Yochanan is the one who mentions that that the machloikas is eshel p'sich v'kever b'lo dam or not. So now the question is, ulahach lishna, according to that second version, the Amar Rabbi Yochanan be eshel p'sich v'kever b'lo dam from Mishlagi, that Rabbi Yochanan says over there, the machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is whether the womb is able to open, the cervix, whatever, is able to open without blood coming out. Then, according to that version, lishlag nami Rabbi Yehuda baha, then Rabbi Yehuda should be arguing in this case as well. Because Rabbi Yochanan is just saying over here that Rabbi Yehuda is just saying it obviously can't be blood. Fine, very nice, it can't be blood, but it's still a big enough piece that you have psichos akever. So why isn't Rabbi Yehuda arguing? The answer is,
depends basically whether or not you hold on the first or the second.
Yes, so that's the question. So not the first or the second Mishnah, but the first or the second Lishnah, yeah. Right, exactly. So according to the first version, what Rabbi Yochanan just said over here, that in this case where you have a fish shape, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree she's tar. Fine. If you go according to the original version that Rabbi Yochanan said, it all depends on the color of it, then fine. But if you go according to the second version that Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yehuda would say that always, whenever there's psichos akever, there's always blood, then Rabbi Yehuda should be saying, in this case, you should argue over here. It doesn't matter whether there's blood or not. The answer is, okay, of necessity, in fact, the whoever learns that second version of the Gemara, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying it depends on Epshal of Psichas HaKever or not, Masni Hachi, he would necessarily have to learn like this, Rabbi Yochanan v'Resh Lakish, that Resh Lakish says that the last part of our Mishnah is actually only a coin to Chachamim, whoever learns the second version of Rabbi Yochanan before would have to say that Rabbi Yochanan agreed to that as well. So in other words, we have two different versions of what Rabbi Yochanan said. One version is that he argues with Resh Lakish and says that the case with the fish, with the fish-shaped piece, is even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because there's no issue, because it's obviously not blood, because it wouldn't have become that shape. Another version of what Rabbi Yochanan says is that he would actually agree with Resh Lakish that this part is only according to the Chachamim, because in fact Rabbi Yehuda would be Metameh on the grounds of Psichos HaKever. Then we said, Hamapelas Kimin Behemah. Then we talked about a case. Yeah, two different versions of what Rabbi Yochanan said, right? I mean, this is all within Rabbi Yehuda's opinion anyway. The halacha, according to the Rambam, the halacha is like the Chacham. According to everybody else, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. But if you have psichas akever, then anyway, she's tamei, so then it's a moot point whether there's blood or not. Okay. Fine.
But you think according to the Acharonim, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, but...
According, it's not just Acharonim, but the Rishonim as well hold that way. Most Rishonim other than Rambam.
Which version of Rabbi Yehuda?
Fine, but the bottom line is, as long as you have psichas akever, then she's tamei. So therefore, yes, in this case, then of necessity, we would say that, yes, that's what the Gemara just said. So we would have to say, of necessity, that part of the Mishnah is only according to the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda would disagree. Rabbi Yehuda would say she miscarried a fish-shaped thing. She's tamei. Doesn't matter whether there was blood in it or not, because psichas akever, and that would be the halacha. Then we said, I'm a pelos kumin behemoth. We talked about a case where a woman miscarries something that looks like an animal. So then we had a machlokas Rav Meir and the Chachamim, whether she's tamei or not. Rav Meir says she's tamei from birth, and the Chachamim say that not. Again, leaving aside the Zakever, because we said the Rav Yehuda is the one who holds that, but we're talking strictly from the point of view, do we consider that she's given birth, and therefore she has the usual tuma of a woman who gave birth or not. So, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, my time of the Rav Meir, why does Rav Meir say she's tamei if she miscarries something that looks like an animal? The reason is, and as opposed to where he didn't say that if she miscarried something like a fish that she's tamei. So what's the difference? What's the difference between fish and locusts and what have you versus animals or birds? So the reason is, because when it comes to animals, the pasuk uses the word yitzira to describe them just like it's used for human beings. When it comes to human beings, the Torah describes that our Shapurta says in Perek Aleph of Bereshit, Vayivra Elokim es Adam b'Tzamai. Then in the next chapter it says Vayitzer Hashem Elokim as Adam Ofer Min Hadama. So you have the word Bria and you have the word Yetzira. Meanwhile, when it comes to animals, you have in Perek Beis, it mentions in Perek Aleph when it talks about creating the animals, it doesn't use the word it uses the word bria, but in a different context that we'll see soon, not in connection with the land animals. It just said with the land animals, it just says vayafalekim, Hashem made them. But in Perek Beis, it says vayitzer about them also. So you have the word yitzira. So you have the word yitzira about animals and about people. So therefore, the mayor says you have a gzeirah shavah. Since it says yitzira by people and it says yitzira by animals, therefore, just like a woman is tamei later, is tamei from the birth after she gives birth to a human being shaped baby, the same thing when it's an animal shaped baby, right? So the question is, elamayata, by that logic, how about the most tanin, are you going to say that if she miscarried something that looks like a tanin, which is a kind of large fish, yeah? Are you going to say also that his mother is tamei from the birth? Because after all, the Torah also mentions specifically Hashem creating it. Because the pasuk says that Hashem created the large taninim. So therefore, so it uses the word vayivra. Okay, but it could be fairly large. I mean, we don't know how large a tanin is. Okay, but maybe not. So we know there's a few different opinions what a tanin is exactly. But the Tosfos points out, actually, that same pasuk continues, the eis kol nefesh hachaya harimeses asher shotzu hamayim. The pasuk continues that Hashem created all the fish. So the word vayivra refers to all of them. So then we should say that if she miscarried a fish-shaped fetus, then she should be tamei by that same logic, because there's vayivra. The answer is, Amri, the answer is, Don Yitzira mi Yitzira vein Don in Bria mi Yitzira. We learn Xeda Shabbat from one word Vayitzer to another, but not where one of them says Vayitzer and the other one says Vayitzer. And, of course, the famous question, the Gemara asks in a dozen or so places in Shas, my Naftimina, who cares if it's a different Shodesh? Ha-tonet ve'ra b'shmol v'shava koin uvo'a koin zuhi shiva zuhi bia. Don't we have the famous Xeda Shabbat of tonet ve'ra b'shmol, hello, that when it comes to the dinim of tzaras of houses, one pasuk says v'shav hakoyin, the kohen returns. Another one says uvah hakoyin, the kohen comes. And you learn gzeira shava, zuhi shiva, zuhi bia. The same rules apply when he returns the second time as when he comes the first time. Which has to do basically if you have a situation. The pasuk doesn't spell out in so many words, but you have a situation over there where the house has been locked up for a week. And so if the tzaras spreads after the first week, the pasuk says they have to tear down the house. What happens if it didn't spread, and now you have a second week, and you have a second week? So what do you do? What do you do at the end of the second week? Tzaras is still there, so
it didn't spread.
So it didn't spread. So then you have we learn from Rishav to Uva. We learn that you don't tear down the house Instead, you do what you would do at the end of the first week if it's spread, which is that you take off the plaster from the wall, you take out the stones where the taras was, you replace them, and then you lock up the house for another week. So we see that you do a gzeira shava between the words shav and ba, even though they're two different shoshim. So why can't we make a gzeira shava over here between, once we have it by there, then we can have it in other places as well. So the same thing, we should be doing a gzeira shava from Bria to Yetzira. But oid, and not only that, nigma Bria Megria. Actually, even if you're going to argue that we need a gzeira shava with the same word, we still have the word vayivra by both of them. Because the pasuk says that Hashem created man in his image. Again, you have in Perek Aleph it says Vayivra, in Perek Beis it says Vayitzer. So why are we assuming that we should make the Zera Shava from the two Vayitzers in Perek Beis, rather than that we should do Vayivra from the two Vayivras in Perek Aleph? And in that case, we would say that a Tanin is included, because a Tanin, you have two Vayivras and you have two Vayitzers. You have Vayivra when it comes to a human being, and Vayivra when it comes to the Taninim, which is some kind of fish, right. Some kind of fish. Then you have Vayitzer that it says by people, and Vayitzer that it says by land animals. So why are we learning the Zeta Shava from the two Vayitzers, and therefore saying that Reb Meir is saying that the din would apply only if she gives birth to an animal-shaped fetus, instead say that we should learn from Vayivra and say that it should apply to a fish-shaped fetus? Some of them are far from explaining that the Gemara is asking that we should do both Gzeira Shavas and say both of them. Or maybe it means we should only do the Tanin, but whatever. Why are we saying that it should apply to animals and not to Tanin? The answer is Amri. They answer, Vayivra Legufe. The Chachamim in the Yeshiva answered. Vayivra Legufe. The word Vayivra in the Pasuk. Vayivra Legufe. The word Vayivra is needed for it, for the Guf. It's needed to tell us that Hashem created human beings. Vayitzer la'achri. Then the Vayitzer that it says in the next parak is meant, is open, is available for Gzeira, is meant to teach us that we use it for Gzeira Shavah. So we can't use Vayivra because it's needed right there in the Pasuk, because Hashem, the Pasuk needs to tell us that Hashem created human beings. The question, V'donin Yitzira me'yitzira. So therefore, we're going to learn Gzeira Shavah from one Yitzira to the other. The question is, on the contrary, though, let's argue that the Vayitzer in Parash Beis is needed legufa. It's needed to teach us the basic concept that Hashem created human beings. Vayivra lachnuya. Then we would say the vayivra in Perek Aleph is mufne, is available. The done in bria midbria, and then we would learn a zeta shava from bria to bria. So why are you assuming that vayivra is not available for the zeta shava and vayitzer is, when it could be the other way around?
But the zeta shava was used by vayitzer, and
you have words for zeta shava, but with vayivra, and you have with vayitzer. Right. So why should we assume that we're using? So we have vayivra and vayitzer by human beings. So why should we assume that vayivra is not available for the zeta shava and vayitzer is, and then we're going to say the other half of the zeta shava is the vayitzer by animals? Instead, say that the vayitzer is not needed. It's available for, as I say, that vayitzer is needed to teach us that Hashem created Adam and Chava.
And then it's open.
Vayivra, though it's not available. Vayivra then would be open for Gzeira Shava.
If
vayitzer is needed for the gufay, then vayivra becomes available. Mm-hmm. And vayivra, then the other half of the Gzeira Shava for vayivra would be with a tanin. And we would say that if she miscarries, a tanin shaped fetus. Okay. So the answer is, Ella, no. The answer is like this. Vayitzer mufne mishneitz dadin. The answer is like this. The reason why the Gzeira Shava from Vayitzer is preferable is because the word Vayitzer is available at both ends. Mufne gabe adam or mufne gabe behem. Both by people and by animals, the word Vayitzer is not needed. Because for both of them, we have other psukim that teach us that Hashem made them. For human beings, it says Vayivra. For animals, it says Vayas in Perek Aleph. So therefore, the word Vayitzer by both of them is extra.
Therefore, you can use it.
Vayivra gabe adam mufne gabe taninim enim mufne. On the other hand, the word vayivra, sure, you could argue with mufne by people because you already have vayitzer in Parakbeis, but there's no other pasuk that says that Hashem created the taninim. In fact, in Parakbeis, it doesn't mention Hashem creating the fish at all, because Perek Aleph is telling us blow by blow, day by day, what Hashem created each day. Perek Beis is focusing on particular details within Ma'aseh Bereishis. You have, Rashi explains on the Pesukim over there, like you have, in Perek Aleph, it says generically that Hashem created Adam and Chava. It doesn't go into details, so in Perek Beis it goes into details. And in Perek Aleph it says generically that Hashem created the animals, but it doesn't go into specifics, so in Perek Beis it mentions that Hashem also brought them to Adam to name them. That sort of thing. So But by the Tanunim, it doesn't say anything in Perek Beis at all about the Tanunim or about fish in general, because it said about them what it needs to say in Perek Aleph, that Hashem created them. There's no reason to repeat it in Perek Beis, so there's nothing new to teach us about it. So therefore, the word Vayivra, when it comes to the Tanunim and the fish, is not Mufna. So therefore, if we have a choice between a Zera Shava, that's Mufna from both, that's available, where the word is available from both sides, by Adam and by versus one side, then we're going to pick the one of the two sides.
Which is
Vayister. So my Mufna Gabe Behema, so what do we mean that the word Vayister is available for Zera Shava when it comes to animals? Ilema Medichtiv, are you going to say because you have in Perek Aleph, Vayas, Elokim Eschayet Ha'aretz, it says that Hashem created the animals of the earth. Uchtiv, and then in Perek Beis, this is Vayitzer Hashem Elokim in Adam HaKachayat HaSadah, that Hashem Elokim created from the earth all the animals of the field. Well, then you could argue, Gabe Tanin Nami Achmir Yemufna. Shouldn't you argue in that case? It is available by Tanin. Dichtiv the Esko Remes HaAdamah, because in Perek Aleph, it continues after it says that Hashem created all the Chayat HaSadah, that same pasuk continues that Hashem created the Esko Remes HaAdamah, everything that swarms on the earth, which at this point the Gemara is assuming includes fish as well. Uchtiv, one second. And it says, but it also says separately that Hashem created the big taninim. So therefore, you do have the word vayivra available by them. The answer is remes tichtiv hasan v'yaboshu. The answer is that the eighth called remes ha'adama means only the land animals. In fact, Tosfos points out what was the Gemara even thinking with the question? We know that pasuk is on the sixth day when Hashem created the land animals. We know that the taninim were created along with all the fish on the fifth day. So what was the Gemara's even have on? What was the Gemara's have on? Even with the question.
This was on the seventh day?
Nothing was created on the seventh day. Is on the sixth day.
Right.
Hashem created all the land animals and then created Adam and Chava.
Right.
But this Ve'ez called Remes Adama, the Makshin and the Gemara thought that might include the fish as well.
Right.
And the Gemara is saying, no, that's only talking about land animals. So you have Chayas Hasada means the larger land animals, the ones that clearly walk around. Remes, as Rashi explains on the Pesukim over there, would be the ones, not so much Shrustim necessarily, but animals that creep or crawl or whatever close to the ground, like, for example, mice or snakes or something else. We'll talk about that soon. But for example, mice and other creatures like that have very small legs that like they don't look like they're walking at all. They look like they're just moving. Anyway, so the point is that yes. So therefore, we only have one. The Gemachim thought that maybe we have two Pesukim that describe the creation of the fish. One by Yivra Elokim at Tanimim, and the other one by Esko Remes HaAdama. And the Gemara is saying that no, the second one of those refers to land animals. Only the first one, Vayivra Elokim Et HaTaninim, refers to fish. So therefore, that end of the Gzeirah Shavah is not Mufna. So that is why we're not going to do that Gzeirah Shavah. Okay.
Why? Because it's
not Mufna Mitzad Echad. Because it's not Mufna Mishnei Tzadim. It's not available at both ends.
One end is
because at the end with the Taninim is needed Lagufa. It needs to tell us that Hashem created the Taninim. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My nakimina ben mufna mitzad echad l'mufna mishnei tzadin." What is the actual difference?
I mean, how would you think that Hashem would not create the tanin? Who created them then?
That's fine, but nevertheless, each thing that it says in the Pesukim over there, it says explicitly that Hashem created the heavens and the earth, and that Hashem created that Hashem created light and dark, and so on and so forth. Each thing it says vayas or vayivro or vayister or whatever it says, some kind of expression. But that's just because on the most shot level, because we don't.
You cannot call them behemoths.
Whatever. What? No, Taninim are not behemoths, they're fish.
They're fish, yeah. But maybe we saw that behemoth can be used generically.
Behemoth can be used for chaya and vice versa, but fine. But Taninim doesn't mean animals in general. Okay, fine. So the Gemara asks, so my nakimina ben mufna mitzad echad l'mufna mishnei tzadin. Okay, what is the actual difference, though, whether Gzeirah Shavah is available at both ends or one end? What's the difference? Gzeirah Shavah is Gzeirah Shavah on the face of it. Well, but why should we assume that one is more powerful than the other? The answer is not Kamina. The difference is the Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. And this concept that we're going to learn now, the Gemara refers to this concept at a few different places, but this is the one place in Shas where it actually spells it out in detail. You have a machloikas over here of how Gzeirah Shavah work. This concept of Mufna Mitzad Echad and Mufna Mishnei Tzadin and what kind of Gzeirah Shavah we can and can't use, the Gemara refers to this briefly in some places, but this is the main place.
We've talked about it before
in Mizrachim, and this is the main place. So Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, who in turn said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, whole Gzeira Shava she'ena mufna kol ikar, he says like this: if a Gzeira Shava is not mufna at all, the words on both ends of the Gzeira Shava are needed for some other purpose, such as just for the simple meaning of the pasuk ein lemeid in hemeni. You can't use such a Gzeira Shava at all. Mufna mitzad echad, if it's only mufna at one end, then, like for example, the Vayivra over here, l'Rabbi Shmuel l'meidin v'ein v'shivin, then according to Rabbi Shmuel, you can learn such a Gzeira Shava. However, you could also, you could learn it up. You could learn it v'ein v'shivin, and you can't shlug it up. Even if you were to argue that there's a reason that, to argue that one of these things is not similar to the other, one of them has a greater chumrah over the other or something, as the Gemara is going to give an example soon about people versus animals, nevertheless, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that's good enough. You could learn it. L'Rabbanan l'meidin v'mashivin. According to Rabbanan, fine, you're able to use such a Gzeira Shava if it's only mufne mitzad echad, but you could also find a way to shlug it up. Mufne mishnei tzadin, but if it's available at both ends, like the Vayitzer over here, divrei hakol l'meidin v'ein v'shivin, then both the Chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel would agree that such a Gzeira Shava, you can use it and you can't shlug it up. You can't disprove it, even if you're going to argue, for example, that people have a greater chumrah over animals.
You can slug up a one-sided Gzeira Shava, but not a two-sided.
According to the Chachamim, yes. According to Rabbi Shmuel, either way. Well, the question... hold on, but the question we still have to figure out. Rabbi Shmuel, my ikka ben mufna mitzad echad, l'mufna mishnei tzadin. Fine, but according to Rabbi Shmuel, what's the actual difference? If according to Rabbi Shmuel, even a one-sided Gzeira Shava you can't slug up, then what's the difference between that and a two-sided Gzeira Shava? There has to be a difference. The answer is not, because after all, we said before, we're going to learn the Gzeira Shava Vayitzer and not Vayivra. According to Tanna Rabbi Shmuel, that wouldn't work. But the answer is not Gemina. Even so, Rabbi Shmuel would say there still is a difference. If you have two possible Gzeira Shavas that are available, one is Mufna Mitzad Echad, where only one of the two words is available because the other one is needed for some other purpose, such as the Vayivra over here, and a Mufna Mishnei Tzadin, we have a different one available that is available at both sides, like the Vayitzer, where both Vayitzers are available because we don't need them for the simple meaning of the pasuk. Then Shavkinan Mufna, so Rabbi Shmuel would agree, even though neither of them can be shlugged up, but Shavkinan Mufna Mitzad Echad V'Yafkinan Mufna Mishnei Tzadin. Nevertheless, we would ignore the one that's only Mitzad Echad and use the one that's Mishnei Tzadin. Therefore,
if it's the same, why would you use
because one? That would be the reason, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that is the difference between one and the other. Both of them are usable, but if you have a choice between one and the other, you're going to use the one that's Mufna Mishnei Tzadin.
Because
that one is preferable, because that one is a strong Gzeira Shava.
So he agrees you can use both, but he also agrees...
He says that if you have only one available, if the only Gzeira Shava available to you is Mufna Mitzad Echad, then you can use it and you can't slug it up. But if you have two possible Gzeira Shavas available, one of which is Mufna Mitzad Echad and the other is Mufna Mishnei Tzadin, then you're going to use the second one. By the way, I mean, you have a good deal of discussion over here. Doesn't the Gemara mentions in various places that a person can't come up with a Gzeira Shava on its own? So what are we talking about over here about different Gzeira Shavas that we could use or not use? Did they have a Masorah on it or not? So there's a few different possibilities. One possibility is that maybe our Gemara argues with those other Gemaras and says a person could come up with a Gzeira Shava on his own. Another possibility, which the Shalach Kodesh mentions, for example, is that it's not that, but you have these different kinds of Gzeira Shavas. Sometimes the Chachamim learned from their Rebbeim all the details of the Gzeira Shava, the actual words that are supposed to be used and the din that you're supposed to learn from them. Sometimes they learned only the din but not the words to use, so then that's the kind of thing that the Gemara can be discussing over here, what possible things we can learn. So in other words, the question is, in this case, this would be an example of that. The Chachamim knew, or the mayor at least knows, that there's some kind of, there is a din that if a woman miscarries something that's not human-like, that she can still be tamei. The question is, is it that we're talking like animal-like, and then we would use vayitzer, or is it tanin-like, and then we would use vayivra? And so the Gemara is going back and forth over here to try to establish which one is the one that is meant to be used, that we're going to reconstruct which one was meant to be used, and therefore which one would result in Rav Meir's din. Tosfos also mentions in some places that the Tosfos learns that each of the Chachamim had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim a certain number of Gzeira Shavas that there are in the Torah, but not always necessarily the identity of the particular ones. So therefore, different Chachamim can argue they have a slot available for a Gzeira Shavas, so one of the Chachamim might use it and another one might disagree. So in this case, like, there's a slot available. Do we fill it with the Vayisra, or do we fill it with the Vayivra? And therefore, we have to figure out on the basis of the rules of how Gzeirah Shavah work. So going back to what we were saying before, so according to the Chachamim, therefore the Torah made the Gzeira Shava of Behema, the one of Vayisra, is available to both sides, in order that we shouldn't be using the Mufne Mitzad Echad, because that one, there was a way of slogging it up, as the Gemara is going to mention soon. So Rashi learns that this line of the Hochi Afniye is saying not according to Rabbi Shmuel, because according to Rabbi Shmuel, rather we have either one could have been used, because it doesn't matter, you can't slug it up either way. But according to the Chachamim, according to the Chachamim, where you are able to slug up a one-sided one, the Gemara is going to point out soon that there is a way to slug up the one-sided one, and therefore we have to use the two-sided one. According to
the specific case.
Right.
If it was another case, Chachamim would have said maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Other Rishonim, by the way, learn differently than Rashi. They say the Gemara at this point doesn't even know that there's a way to slug up this. So therefore, the Salahachi Afniye is talking according to Rabbi Shmuel. That Rabbi Shmuel, given that Rabbi Shmuel is telling us, when you have a choice, you're going to use the Mufne Mitzad Mishneh Tzadin, that is why the Torah gave us over here one Mufne Mishneh Tzadin, in order that we don't use the wrong one. So the Gemara adds, before we get back to explaining Rav Meir's opinion, Rav Acha Brei de Rava Maskin La Meshmei de Rava Lazar L'Kula. Rav Acha Brei de Rava learns in the name of Rav Lazar a different version of how the mechanism of Gzeira Shavah works, differently than what we just said. We just quoted in the name of Shmuel that said that if it's not mufne at all, you can't use it. If it's mufne mitzad echad, then you have machloikus whether you can slog it up or not. And if it's mufne mishnei tzadin, then for sure it's impregnable. Rav Acha Brei de Rava has a different version of it. Kol gzeira shava she'ena mufne kol ikar. If it's not mufne at all, if both words are used for other purposes, lemeidin, you're still able to use such gzeira shava, or meshivin, but you would be able to slog it up. Mufne mitzad echad, if it's only if the word is on one side is available but the other one is not, l'Rabbi Shmuel l'meidin v'ein meshivin, then according to Rabbi Shmuel, that's it, it's unassailable, you can use it, you can't slug it up. L'Rabbanan l'meidin v'meshivin, according to Rabbanan, you could learn it, but you could still slug it up. Mufne mishnei tzadin nivrahak l'meidin v'ein meshivin, and if it's available from both sides, then everybody would agree that you can learn it and you can't slug it up. So the actual difference would be in the case with einim mufne kol ikar. According to Shmuel, you can't use such a Gzeira Shavah at all. According to Rav Acha Brei de Rava, you could. The other two cases, you're right, there's no difference. Okay, so the question is, in our case, in this version, according to Rav Acha Brei de Rava, you're saying that if it's Mufne Mitzad Echad, then if it's not mufna at all, then we're saying you can't use it. And if it's mufna mitzad echad, then we're saying the chachamim are saying you could use it, but you could slug it up. So the question is, so what's the actual difference? Either way, if we're saying that one that's not mufna at all, you can't use it, and you're saying that one that is mufna mitzad echad, you can use it if there's no pircha. Again, you can't use it if there's a pircha. So what you could slug it up. So what's the difference? Yeah. The answer is nafkamina. Still, even according to the Chachamim, according to Rav Acha Brei de Rava's version, there'll be a practical difference. Hechad mashkacha from mufne mitzad echad, v'she'ena mufne kol ikar. Suppose that you have one available gzeira shava, which is mufne mitzad echad, another one which is not mufne at all. Suppose that the lav lahai islei pircha, v'lav lahai islei pircha. Suppose that neither one can be slugged up. Then what we say is shakkin and shayna mufne kol ikar. We're going to ignore the one that's not mufne at all. We're going to use the one that's mufne mitzad echad because that one, fine. If you can find a pircha, you can slug it up. But if you can't, then you can use it. So therefore, the Chachamim will say that you can use that. Okay. The hocha mai pircha ikar. So now, when we're getting back to, we said, our case, we have two gzeira shavas available, vayitzer vayitzer and vayivra vayivra. We said vayivra is only mitzad echad. And Vayitzer is Mitzhnei Tzadin. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, according to the first version of Rabbi Shmuel, we understand why we want to use it, because because that's the one you should prefer when you have to. But according to, if we say now, according to Rav Acha Brei de Rava, and for that matter, even in Shmuel's version, we said that if you can slug it up, then you can slug it up. So what way is there to slug up a Gzeira Shavah between a person and animals? or between a person and panim rather. The answer is mishum de ikal mikrach mala adam shekin matam mechayim. You could slug it up and say that a person has a chumrah where they're able to become tameh while they're alive. So therefore, maybe the Torah is machmer on a person, just like the Torah is machmer on a person. He touches a dead sheriff, for example, he becomes tameh. Whereas an animal touches a dead sheriff, it doesn't. A live animal touches a dead sheriff, it doesn't become tameh. So maybe therefore the Torah is also machmer that when a woman gives birth to a human shaped fetus, then she should be tameh later. How do you want to compare that, for example, to fish, where fish, live fish, are not able to be makabel tumah? So that's the pircha. That's the way we can slug up that zera shava between vayivra by people and vayivra by fish.
Because fish
can't become tameh when they're alive,
so
and people can.
Right. The zera shava that is from them.
From them. So now that we have a zera shava that's mufna mishnei tzadin, we don't care if there's a pircha. You're going to say, you're going to compare human beings to animals. You're going to say, but animals is the same thing. A live animal doesn't become tameh. Doesn't matter. It's a mufna mishnei tzadin, and therefore that zera shava is unassailable. So that's it.
Where's the one-sided Zera Shava.
You could slug up because again, you can argue that people and fish are different. People are Matame while they're, can become Tame while they're alive, fish can't. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that's all one reason for what Rav Meir says. V'chein Amar Rav Chiya Ba'aba Amar Rav Yechanan, Hainu Taima de Rav Meir. The reason why Rav Meir says that she's Tame if she miscarries an animal shaped baby, an animal-shaped fetus, whatever you want to call it, is hoyel v'nemer v'yitzir ka'adam, because the Torah uses the word v'yitzir about it, just like it uses about people. Okay. On the way to Am.
Yitzir uses yitzir for behemoths.
And for people. So therefore we have a zera shava. And we said it's a
people can become tameh.
Right. Well, so we said, no, the fact that people can become tameh is neither here nor there. It's true that people can become tameh and animals can't. Okay. However, since it's a zera shava that is muskem b'shnei tzadin, the word v'yitzir is not needed to teach us that Hashem created people, because you have the word v'yivra for it. The word v'yitzir is not needed to teach us that Hashem created the animals, because you have the word v'yas for it. Therefore, it's mufna mishnei tzadin. Neither one of those vayitzers had to be written in the Torah. Therefore, it's gzera shava that is mufna mishnei tzadin. And therefore, we don't care how many ways we can find to slug it up. It's still a strong gzera shava, and we can use it.
Even if we can slug it up.
Even if we can slug it up, that's mufna mishnei tzadin. That's what we say. Okay. Amalei Rav.
If it was mufna
mishnei tzadin, then according to the Chachamim, we would care exactly right. Amalei Rav Ami, so Rav Ami asks Rav Yechanan, or L'Chiya Ba'aba, Elamayata, by that logic, if you're telling me that anything that it says the word Yitzira, then a woman is Tomei when she miscarries, Hamapelas Demus Har, suppose a woman miscarries a baby that's shaped like a mountain, Sima Tzmeya Leda, you're going to say that his mother is Tomei from the birth, Shenema, Kihine Yoitzer Harim Uvoy Reruach, you have a pasuk in Amos that describes Hashem as forming the mountains and creating the wind. So therefore, you have the word yoitzer when it comes to mountains as well. Amalei, so he, Rav Chiya Ba'aba answers him, how me come up, tell us, how could a woman possibly miscarry something as big as a mountain, even if it was the shape of a mountain? Eben who'd come up, tell us, not a mountain, it's just something, the shape of a stone. And wahu gush ikri, you wouldn't call that a mountain, you would call it a gush, you would call it a chunk. It doesn't say anywhere that Hashem created chunks.
No.
So therefore, yeah. Okay. Still by that logic, on a pellet ruach tehei mitzmei aleda. Fine. What about if she miscarries wind, just like empty air, like an empty sack or something? Then she should be tomei from the birth. Hoy over nemer bria ka'adam, because after all, it says the word bria about it, like it does about people. Dichtivu voire ruach, because it says the same passage. It said yoseh harumu voire ruach, that Hashem creates the wind. And b'chitema loy mufna, so you're going to answer, okay, but the word bore there is not mufna, because it's needed to teach us that Hashem created the wind, because it doesn't say anywhere otherwise in the Torah specifically that Hashem created the wind. Okay, obviously Hashem created it, but it never says in so many words in Chumash that Hashem created the wind. I mean, you have in Pasuk Beis, in Bereshit, it says, v'ruach alekim, v'rachet alekim, but it doesn't say in so many words, v'yach alekim at the ruach. Nevertheless, fine, but still you have separate psukim that mention the different things that Hashem created. So for one thing, we want to understand, we want to make it clear that it's not that Hashem, for example, like just created the raw material and then it just formed itself by evolutionary processes or whatever. The point is that maybe that's one idea. Anyway, so the question is, so over here you would argue the word borei ruach is not mufna, But no, it is mufna. Because after all, this pasuk in Amos could have said that Hashem creates the Hashem forms the mountains and the wind. And instead, it uses the word boire separately for ruach. On the contrary, it means it is mufna. Here's a perfectly good
bit.
If it doesn't have to use the word boire over here, it could have said yotzehorim ruach. Hashem forms the mountains and the ruach, and instead it says a separate word boire. When it comes to the ruach, then that means we have its mufna. So it's mufna at least.
Boire,
the word boire is mufna. Yeah. So therefore, so we should say if she miscarries wind, it would not be mufna if we needed to be told over here that Hashem created the wind. But over here, the word yotzer will serve that purpose perfectly well. It already says in the pasuk yotzer harim, so it doesn't need to say a separate verb for ruach. It could have used the same verb for both of them.
So therefore, it's mufna.
Omalei, so Rav Chiya bar Abba tells him, fine, but. But when it comes to making Gzeira Shavas, we can only make a Gzeira Shavas between things that are in the Chumash, in Torah, in the narrow sense, meaning the five Chumashim. We cannot learn Gzeira Shavas. Yes, even if it's Mufna, we can't learn it between Chumash and Nevi'im.
And here we're in Nevi'im?
Here is the Pasuk in Amos. Amos is one of the Nevi'im. Yeah, he's one of Treyasa.
What did he say?
The positive, he named Yotze Horem Avoy Ruach, the positive that we're quoting, look on the side of it, it's almost valid. Okay. Tosfos HaRosh points out, sometimes, there are actually places where the Gemara does do a Gzeira Shavah between Divrei Torah and Divrei Kabbalah. We actually had something a few days ago where a mayor offered such a Gzeira Shavah. However, Tosfos HaRosh says, when you have an available Gzeira Shavah between Divrei Torah, then you don't learn from Divrei Kabbalah. If there's no Gzeira Shavah available in Torah, then yes, you can use a Gzeira Shavah to Divrei. That's right. So therefore, but over here, we have one available in Torah, because we have the one with animals, by Yisr.
You cannot draw a lot from the
now you say, now we're saying that sometimes you can. Okay.
So it's not an absolute rule.
Okay, right. Okay. So all of that is one reason, again, for the mayor, that he says because of the Zer Shavah by Yisr, that is why if the woman miscarries or gives birth or whatever you want to call it to an animal-shaped fetus, then she becomes Tomei from the birth. Okay.
Mainly because of...
Because of the Gzeira Shavah by Yitzhak. Okay. Now a second explanation. Omer Rav Baba Chana, Omer Rav Yechanan. Hainu Taima did a Meir. Rav Meir's reason is based on a whole different point. Nothing to do with the Gzeira Shavahs. Hoyo ve'enehem domes kishal adam. The reason is, he says, because the eyes of domestic and wild animals are like the eyes of people. And therefore, in other words, therefore, it's like a person. It has a certain similarity to a person, as opposed to fish have a different shape of eyes.
Why are they?
I was going to talk about that. Wait. So the question
what
is, it matters. In other words, therefore, a mayor would say that there's a certain similarity over there. But wait.
Therefore,
behemoths are more like people, and fish are not. So the question is, Ella may after, by that logic, Hamapelas Dmus Nachash, suppose that a woman miscarries something that looks like a snake, Tehei Imo Tmeya Leda, you should argue by that logic that she is Tomei from the birth, Hoyova Galgal Eino Agula Kishal Adam, because the eyeball of a snake is round like the eyeball of a person. The Chitema Hochi Nami, so you might say, maybe indeed, yes, in the case where she miscarried a baby that looks like a snake, Rav Meir would say she's Tomei, and the Chacham would say that not. But then the Mishnah should have explicitly mentioned a snake. The fact that the Mishnah didn't mention it, the fact that it just said Behem of Achaya and Behem Achaya of Oif implies that they would both agree, a snake is not Tomei. However, the Gemara says no. Just the opposite. If the Mishnah had mentioned a nachash, have amina, then you would think the nachash would have plagued Rabbanan alei de Rav Meir. You know why the Chachamim argue with Rav Meir when it's a snake? Because it doesn't say yitzira by snake. It says chaya. Tosfos points out the nachash is a chaya. However, Tosfos says that. The chaya that's mentioning in our Mishnah and the chaya of which the pasuk says vayasa lekimas chaya ta'aretz are the ones that have feet. The snake we know originally had feet and then they were chopped off after the chatei tadah. So therefore it's called by a different category. It's called chaya horemeset.
What does it say about that?
So vayas, right. So if you say so you would say snake, the Chachamim disagree because it doesn't say yitzira by snakes. It only says yitzira by animals that actually walk. But you would think that maybe they would agree with him when it comes to domestic and wild animals. Because after all, we said before, you have the Gzeira Shavu Vayitzir. We wouldn't know that the Chachamim argue with him. So therefore, the Mishnah could not mention the snake. It had to mention Behema V'chaya. To clarify, even though Behema V'chaya, it says Vayitzir, and Reb Meir has a Gzeira Shavu, even so the Chachamim argue. But fundamentally, Rav Abahana is saying Rav Meir's reason has nothing to do with the Gzeira Shavu. It actually has to do with the shape of the eyes. Okay. So in other words, what we have is like this. So in other words, Rav Meir, according to this explanation, Rav Meir would say that if she miscarries a behema or chaya or a snake, then she is in fact tamei leida.
Right.
The reason why the Mishnah didn't mention the snake is because then we would misunderstand what the Chachamim argue with Reb Meir on. But the reason that Reb Meir says nothing to do with Gzeira Shavu, says Rav Abahana, but having to do with the shape of the eye. Snakes have a shape of the eye like people, so do animals, but fish do not. What?
So they're people? So, no, they're eyes like people?
Whether they're people, that's we're going to discuss that point soon. But as far as the dinim of the woman being tamei for giving birth so the question is, what do you mean that animals have eyes shaped like people? V'ha'gavid mumin katani la, just the opposite. In Bechoris, when we learned about all the mumim that make an animal unfit to be brought as a korban, and that in the case of Bechor, therefore you can shecht it anywhere, we said one of them was Esher Gagal Einei Ogel Kishaladim. We said if its eye is round like a person, so animals do not have round eyes like people. The answer is, like Kasha, Hab'uchma Hab'tziria. There's no contradiction. One is talking about the black of the eye, and the other is talking about the eye socket. When it comes to the black of the eye, that's what you were saying a minute ago, Yaakov. That's what Rashi says before. Shachar Shavayin, the black, the pupil of the eye, is round in animals and in people. So in that sense, they have a similarity. But when it comes to the actual eye socket, then it's not the same. Then it's not the same. People's eye sockets are more or less round. Animals are not.
They're not round?
They're not completely round. They're oval, I guess. I don't know. When we learned this in Bechoris, actually, we learned a couple of different possibilities. In particular, there are actually animals, goats, for example, that don't have round pupils. Their pupils are more oval-shaped. Yeah. So another possibility, actually, when we say over here the shachar, when we say over here uchma, may mean the round line that you have around the iris. If you look carefully at your eye, you have the pupil in the middle, you have the iris around it, and then you have a black line that separates the iris from the rest of the eye. So with that, with animals, as in people, that is round, as opposed to the pupil, is not necessarily the same. But in other words, again, there's a certain, on the side of here, it brings from Rabbeinu Chanan, means the red or reddish line that surrounds the iris. In other words, the iris is round in animals as well, even if the pupil is not, the iris is. Okay, fine. So in one sense, therefore, animals' eyes are like people because they have in some part of it is round. In a certain other sense, such as the eye socket or the pupil or whatever, is different, and it would be a mum if they look exactly the same, which is what it says in the verse. Okay, fine. So all that's the second explanation for the mayor, because animals have eyes similar to people. They have eyes that have a roundness to them in some aspect like people. Rabbi Yanai says a different explanation. Heinu time at Rabbi Meir. I have a different reason why Rabbi Meir says that she miscarries something looking like behema chayvav, because the eyes of an animal or of a bird are on the front of their head like a human being.
No, that's not true.
So the question is, what about birds? Most birds do not have their eyes in front. Most of them have them to the sides. Because Rameir de Tomei, and Rameir is still saying she's Tomei. Abaya says, according to Rabbi Yana's explanation, Rameir would not be talking about all birds, only Bakaria and Kipufa. He'd only be talking about Kaya and Kipufa, which are certain kinds of owls.
Well, then you cannot compare birds.
That's the point. No, among birds, there are owls that have their eyes in front like humans, and that's what Rameir is saying. If she miscarries an owl-shaped fetus, then she will be Tommy later. But yes, Rameir would agree that if she miscarried, let's say, a chicken-shaped fetus or a dove-shaped fetus, then not, because their eyes aren't in front. So the question is, So you're telling me other kinds of birds, Rav Meir, would not be metame her? Maybe I have a contradiction. Rav Chanina ben Antignus, I remember Ben Gamliel, it says on the side over here, that Rav Chanina ben Antignus, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says, Nivin divir Rav Meir b'behem b'chaya, I find it logical to accept Rav Meir's opinion when it comes to behemah v'chaya, that if she miscarries an animal, a fetus that looks like a behemah v'chaya, then she should be tameh. But I accept the view of the Chachamim. I find it more logical when it's coming to birds. So now we have to figure out, my opus, what kind of bird is Rav Chanina ben Antignus talking about? Again, within Rav Yannai's explanation over here, that Rav Yannai says it depends where on the head the eyes are. So if we're talking about the Karya and Kipufa, if we're talking about owls, then Karya and Kipufa are various kinds of owls. Just in the Torah itself, when it lists the non-kosher birds, there's a couple of different birds that are translated as owls that have different names in Hebrew. So apparently they also have different names in Aramaic. Okay. So if we're talking specifically about Karya and Kipufa, about owls, Maishna Behema Vachaya, then why would it be different with Behema and Chaya? According to Rav Yannai, the reason why Rav Meir is Matame, because they're similar to human beings in having their eyes on the front of their face, then Karya Kipufa Nami, then the same thing would apply to the owls. So then why would the Chachamim distinguish? Obviously, Rav Chanina ben Antignus must be talking about other kinds of birds. He's saying if the baby was shaped like some other kind of bird, then the Chachamim are saying it's Tahar, and I would agree with that. Miklal did a mayor call it Bishar Oifus, implying, therefore, that a mayor actually does agree, even when it comes to other birds, doves or chickens or what have you. So not that it depends whether the eyes are in front or not. It depends just whether it's birds or not. The Chachamim are saying any bird, if the baby is shaped like any bird, she's not Tameh. And Rav Meir is saying if it's shaped like any bird, she is Tameh. So then it has nothing to do with the eyes being in front of her.
Why don't you say any birds, only the birds that have the...
Because again, if we said that it was Karya v'Kipufa, then Rav Chanina does not have to tell us that I agree with the Chachamim when it comes to birds. Because there'd be no reason to say that the Chachamim disagree with Rav Meir when it comes to other kinds of birds. Apparently Rav Meir would say Karya and Kipufa, yes, other birds not. But yeah. The answer is chsuri mechsura. The braisa we can say is actually missing words. V'hochi katani. What it means to say is like this: Rav Chanina ben Antignus emer nirin divrei Rav Meir b'behema v'chaya. I find it logical to accept Rav Meir's opinion when it comes to behema v'chaya. V'hu adin l'karya v'kipufa. And also when it comes to owls. But the divrei Chachamim v'shar ofis. When it comes to other birds, I accept the words of the Chachamim, not because Rav Meir and the Chachamim disagree, but because sha'af Rav Meir le'nechakimam ela b'kari v'kipufa. Because even Rav Meir is only arguing with them about various kinds of owls. Av b'shar ofis moedim. But when it comes to other birds, you would agree according to Rav Yannai's understanding, because their eyes anyway aren't situated on the front of their head. Okay.
That's what you would agree.
So that's why according to Rav Yannai, the braisa is not a contradiction. Rav Yannai is understanding, because Rav Chanina can be saying, basically, I agree with Rav Meir. You should know, by the way, that Rav Meir and the Chachamim are not agreeing if it was other kinds of birds, are not disagreeing if it's other kinds of birds. They're only disagreeing if the baby was shaped like an owl. Because then it has its eyes in front, like the behemah v'chaya. So the Chachamim would say it doesn't matter. The fact that the eyes are in front doesn't make her tummy later. And Rav Meir would say any creature that has the eye in front, that has the eyes in front, yeah.
But Rav Meir would
agree with other birds, which don't even have the eyes on the front of the head, then Rav Meir would agree that she's taller, right? Okay. So the question is, Vahatanya, but we have another braisa, Amar Rav Elazar Rav Tzadik, Hamapelas min behemah v'chaya, if she miscarries a creature that looks like a behemah v'chaya, L'divir Rav Meir Vlad, according to Rav Meir, was saying it's considered a baby, and therefore she's Tomei from the birth. Well, the Dirich Chachamim ain't a Vlad. According to the Chachamim, it's not considered a baby because it doesn't have a human shape. Uva Oifus Tibode. When it comes to a bird, though, it's not so simple. You have to check into it. Now, what does he mean? Laman tibodik. What does he mean? You have to check into it. Lav ledivir Rav Meir. Doesn't it mean within Rav Meir? To amakari v'kipufa ein shar oifus loy. Where Rav Meir is... Sorry, this isn't a question. This is a statement. V'hol tanya. Sorry, I misread it. I hadn't looked at the Rashi. V'hol tanya b'nechutza. This is actually... We learn in a braisa. Amar v'loz v'rapsodik. Ha'apelas min behem v'chaya. Ledivir Rav Meir v'lad v'divir chum eni v'lad. If it's a behem v'chaya, Rav Meir would say she's tamei the chum not. And when it comes to a bird, you have to check. Laman tibodik. Who would say they have to check it. Can't be according to the Chachamim, because according to the Chachamim, there's no reason to be Matan Meir. Lav l'divrei Reb Meir. Obviously, it must be according to Reb Meir. The Amar, he says, Kari v'kipur fa'ein, only if it's shaped like an owl, shall oifas loiv, not if it's shaped like any other bird. So you see from that brisa that Reb Meir would, in fact, make that distinction. However,
meaning the brisa confirms that he
means that brisa confirms that he would say there's a difference between owls and other birds.
And he would agree with Chachamim on
it. He would agree with it, right. However, right, not other animals, but other birds.
I'm sorry, other
birds. Right.
Yeah.
However, Amar of Acha Breder of Ikka. However, of Acha Breder of Ikka now comes up with another explanation. Loi, not necessarily. Tibodik l'rabbana. No, the tibodik could actually be this that we're saying. You have to check into it. What kind of bird was it? Could actually be according to the Chachamim. The Amri kari v'kipufa ein shara oifas loi. We could say the opposite of what we were saying before. We were saying up until now, according to Rav Yanai, that Rav Meir would say she's tummy if it was shaped like an owl and not if it was any other bird, and the Chachamim would say she's tummy either way. Now we can say, though, or she's tummy, rather, either way. Now we can say, says Rav Acha Breza Rebeka, that no. The Chachamim would say that specifically, when it comes to Kari v'kipufa, if she miscarried a baby that looks like a Kari v'kipufa, among all species, then specifically owls, then she would be tummy, but not shar oifas loy, not if it was any other bird or any other animal. So this is the opposite of what we said before. We were saying before that a mayor would say that she's tummy if it was any kind of animal or kari v'kipufa. And the Chachamim would say she's tahor no matter what.
We said before that
Meir would say that if it was a behema or chaya or a kari v'kipufa,
right,
then she's tummy,
right,
because all of those have their eyes on the front of their head. But if it was any other kind of bird, then she'd be tahor.
Right.
And the Chachamim would say she's tahor no matter what, because it doesn't look like a human being.
Right.
Now, according to Rav Acha Breder of Ikka, we're actually saying the other way around. The Chachamim would say, Rav Meir would say behema or chaya or any kind of bird should be tahor. The Chachamim would say behema and chaya, she's not tahor. Most birds, she's not tahor. But kaya or kipufa, she is tahor, if it was owl-shaped.
So we're changing Chachamim and Rav Meir's position.
Umay shna kaya v'kipufa v'chaya. Now why, according to that, why would we argue that a kaya and kipufa would be any different than any other creature? The reason
that's
is not, according to Chachamim. The reason is not only because not only they have their eyes in front, which animals do also, but hoyo v'yesh lahem l'sasay ka'odam. They also have upright cheekbones like people. Namely, with animals and most kinds of birds, with animals and most kinds of birds, you have their eyes, and then their face slopes forward from their eyes and forms a snout or a beak or what have you. Yeah, they form a snout or a beak or whatever, as opposed to an owl, not only its eyes are in front of its head, it has a beak, but still you have the face goes down straight from the eyes, and then you have at the bottom a beak where a person would have their lips. So the basic shape of their face, not only as far as the eyes being in front, but as far as the cheek, also looks like humans. Yeah, so according to Rav Acha Breder of Ikka, that would be a reason for the Chachamim to say that she'd be tameh even if the baby looks like an owl. But only an owl, not any other creature, because any type of owl that has these things, that has eyes in front and cheeks. Because no other animal has both of those. Yeah, basically. So no other animal has that kind of thing, eyes in front and a flat face. So we have altogether five different ways of understanding the machlokas. Well, so the halacha is like the Chachamim.
Yeah,
the halacha is like the Chachamim, because actually we're going to have on other days, we're going to have a further discussion about this. We're going to get back to another point, which is that ultimately we're going to say if it has a certain resemblance to a human being, if it has a certain resemblance to a human being, then she's going to be tameh. What exactly that certain resemblance is, we're going to talk about on Amud Beis. That there have to be certain parts of its face that resemble a human being. And then once that happens, we don't care about the rest of the body, what it looks like here. I'll read to you what the Rambam says on the subject. And well, again, we have more on it on Amud Beis. But here, what the Rambam says is that if it's kamin behema chayav ois, if the face of it looks like a human face, then it's considered a baby. It doesn't matter if the rest of the body looks like a behema or chayav ois. If the face doesn't look like a person, even if the rest of the body looks like a person, then she's not tummy later. What is considered the image of a person's face means that Rambam brings from Amud Beis, where we're going to learn something that Rav says on the subject, that the the what is it, the forehead and the eyebrows and the eyes and the cheeks and the chin have to resemble a person's face. We don't care about the shape of the mouth. We don't care about the shape of the ears. We don't care about the shape of the nose. As long as all those other parts look like a human being's face, the forehead, the eyebrows, the eyes, the cheeks, and the chin. As long as those five parts look like a human being's face, we don't care if the rest of it looks like an animal. Okay.
That's how
the Rambam passes the halacha. Okay.
As far as I know,
it's a matter of hilchasa mashicha. The dinim of tumas yeledes is not. So, well, actually, tumas yeledes is applicable nowadays. Yeah, as far as I know, everybody agrees to that name. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, "Bominei Reb Yirmiyah min Reb Zeira." Reb Yirmiyah asked Reb Zeira a question as follows: "L'Reb Meir." According to Reb Meir, we're saying all this time that Reb Meir is saying that if the woman gives birth to something that looks like an animal, then it's considered a baby, and she is tomei for giving birth to a baby as usual. So the question is, according to Reb Meir, to Amar Behema B'mei Isha Vlad Malyu, Reb Meir is saying that even though it's an animal-shaped baby, because it came out of a woman's womb, it's considered a full-fledged human being. It's considered a full-fledged baby. What about Kibaba Avio Kiddushin Mahu? What about right after this baby is born, suppose it's a girl, suppose that her father accepted Kiddushin on her behalf.
Okay.
Well, she's a living baby.
She's living.
She may not. So the question is. The woman says, "Well, my nachimina, what's the practical difference? She's not going to live long. She's not going to live long anyway." And in fact, Tosfos said, "Well, last one second. The answer is le'itzuri ba'achoisa. The nachimina would be not so much for her, but the question not yibum. No, yibum is between brothers. The question would be: we know that if a man is makadesh a woman, he's also to marry her sister." So therefore, the question is, in this case, would he be also to marry this misshapen baby's sister? Now, that din applies only while the first sister is alive. If a person is makadish, one, or married, for that matter, one woman, and then she dies, he is allowed to marry her sister. So the question is, lememre d'chaye, are you telling me that this baby is going to live long enough for it to be a nachimina? But Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, didn't Rav Yehuda say in the name of Rav, like Omer of Meir, Ella Ha'ul of Menem Eskayim? The whole reason why the Meir is saying The whole reason why Reb Meir is saying that if it's like a behemoth is because a behemoth is of a species that lives long. But in other words, the baby itself is not going to be expected to live very long. Because a baby that's so badly misshapen is not going to live for very long. So what's the nachimina? In fact, Tosfos points
to babies who are badly misshapen of the face. They didn't.
So maybe nowadays they have the technology. But the Gemara is assuming that such a baby is not going to live very long. In fact, for that reason, Tosfos points out the Gemara does not bother asking the question. For example, let's say her father accepted kiddushin on her behalf. What happens? What happens when she's old enough to have relations? If somebody were to be mezana with her, would she be an eshesish? Because of course she's not going to live 3 years. No matter what, she's a treifa. She's for sure going to die within 12 months. So the question is, as far as the sister, but why is it an afkamina? She's not going to live very long, and then her sister is going to be mutter even if he was makadosher. So the Gemara says, Omer of Achaba Yaakov said, Achaba Yaakov says, you should know this was not meant as a serious question that Reb Yirmiyah asked. Ad kan hevir Reb Yirmiyah lo Reb Zeira l'dei dichuch v'loi gochich. Reb Yirmiyah was trying to get Reb Zeira to laugh. Gichuch means to laugh. On the side of it here, it brings from Targum Yonathan when it says in this past week's parasha, Sochacha Sara, Gochacha Sara. So yeah. So the word Schoik means... Reb Yirmiyah, right. Reb Yirmiyah is trying so hard to get Reb Zeira to laugh. So like he's asking him a question that... One second. V'loi Gochich, and yet Reb Zeira would not laugh. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi explains. You have a Gemara in Brachos that says, also la'odim shi malatif schoik ba'ilam azeh. A person is not allowed to fill his mouth with laughter, like to laugh hysterically in this world. And Reb Zeira,
what does it say that?
In Brachos. A person is allowed to laugh, of course, even to Rosh Hashem B'Simcha, but he shouldn't be yamalapis chayik, like he loses control of himself. So Reb Zeira, Rashi says that he was machmir to an expedition.
When Mashiach comes.
Fine, yeah, exactly. Oz yamalis chayikvinu. Then when Mashiach comes, yamalis chayikvinu. But we're not, because Mashiach hasn't come yet. And Reb Zeira was extra machmir on himself in that. Therefore, Reb Yirmiyah is trying to get Reb Zeira to laugh by asking him a question that can't possibly have any real relevance in halacha, because soon this misformed baby is going to die anyway, and therefore it can't be relevant to ask what happens with the din of her sister. We don't find it funny because we don't participate in Torah. We don't. Our life is not Torah. To Reb Zeira, whose whole reality is Torah, Rav Yirmiyah could expect that Rav Zera might find such a thing funny. But he didn't, because he was machmer on himself and wouldn't laugh even on such things. Milta de B'dicha said that was Rava, or Rava did that. Rav Zera did that. In fact, you have the famous story in Megillah, come Rava v'shachted Rav Zera, the whole thing where Rava shechted Rav Zera by the Purim Soda. And in fact, you have a brief thing you have a famous long sticha from our Rebbe that talks about the details, about the inner meaning of that story and everything. But there's a brief thing, and look what the Levi Yitzchak, a letter from a Levi to the Rebbe, and then the Mid-Tzadik, and points out that Rav Zera was from Gvurois, and therefore, being from Gvurois, he was extra machmer on this matter of not laughing. You actually have, by the way, some of the Mephoshim will say, we know that throughout Shas you have oddball questions that Rav Yirmiyah comes up with. Throughout Shas, you always have. So some of the Mephoshim say that maybe that's an example of this, where he's trying to get his Rebbe, Rav Zera, to laugh. Because apparently he wanted that his Rebbe should be a little bit the same. He felt his Rebbe as being a little too over-serious. Yeah, maybe it would expand his mind. In fact, there are some places in the Gemara, there are some places where I think it's Rabbi Bohu, who was a colleague of Rav Zera, calls Rav Zera Yorud Nola, which literally means like a crying jackal. Now, why does he call him by such an insulting term? So the Chavis Yoyer talks about this in a famous tshuva, where he talks about different insulting expressions that Amoraim used to each other. So he says, in this case, Rabbi Bohu was a colleague of Rav Zera. He felt that Rav Zera is being too serious. He's going too far with this chumra of his and not ever allowing himself to be happy and to laugh. And therefore, he calls it by a name like that, like to say you're not doing the right thing. So the same thing, Rav Yirmiyah is Rav Zera's Talmud. He can't go and tell him you're doing wrong, but he's trying to at least get him to laugh. But as it didn't work, Rav Zera didn't take the bait.
Why was he so serious?
He held, as Rashi says, machmer tzvei. He was extra serious. He was extra machmer. Everybody should have some mitzvah that they're extra careful and extra machmer. And this was Rav Zera. Okay. So Gufa, getting back to, we'll learn a few more minutes, and then we'll call it quits. Gufa, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, we said, Loi Amar Rav Meir Ela Hoyle of Minim Iskayim. We said the whole reason why Rav Meir says why she's Tomei if the fetus was shaped like a baby is because of shaped like an animal, is because an animal at least is the kind of creature that could go on living, as opposed to, for example, if it was something that doesn't even have a shape of something that would live. Amr Rav Yirmiyah Megifti. So Rav Yirmiyah Megifti says, this is different than Rav Yirmiyah before, by the way. Afanan Nami Tanei. Gifti is a place in Bava.
We have that name.
Yeah, we've had Rav Yirmiyah Megifti many times. Afanan Nami Tanei. In fact, we can see that it's not that Rav Meir considers the baby itself is going to live for very long. Rav Meir knows it's not going to live for very long. But he's saying the reason is because it's shaped like a creature that if it was that actual creature, would live long. If it was an actual cow, it would live long. Therefore, even though it's a cow-shaped baby and it's so malformed that it's not going to live long, nevertheless, Rav Meir still considers it a baby. Where do we see that, says Rav Yirmiyah Megifti? We learn in a Mishnah, again in Bechoris, which I'll talk about over there, about the two different kinds of bechor. We know there's a bechor as far as getting a double portion of the inheritance, and there's a bechor as far as pidyon haben. So the Mishnah says there, if a woman miscarries a baby that looks like a domestic or wild animal or a bird, Vlad Malyahu, that's not actually in the Mishnah over there, but that's considered a real baby, Divra Meir, Rav Meir says that the baby after that is not considered, Rav Meir says over there, that the baby after that is a bechor as far as nachla. He does get the double portion because this baby that was born first is the baby, but it's not going to live very long. The Chum say no, only if it has the shape of a human being.
Whether it lives or not.
So unless it has the shape of a human being. In other words, Rav Meir would say like this. As far as the Bechor of Pidyon HaBen, that misformed one is going to be the one who would have to have the Pidyon HaBen, and therefore the baby after it would not. He's not a Bechor L'Koyim. But as far as the Bechor L'Nachla, Rav Meir says this first one, the one that's shaped like an animal, is not going to live very long. Therefore, the next one is considered the Bechor L'Nachla. No, it is. Because when it comes to Bechor L'Koyim, you need it to be Peter Rechem, and the next baby is not Peter Rechem. It's not the first one that opened the womb.
Yeah, but this is not a baby.
According to the mayor, it is. Just like in our Mishnah, the mayor says it's considered a baby and she's Tomei for the birth, the same way there he's considered a baby. The same way there it's considered a baby to the extent that the next one is Bechor L'Koyim.
It has eyes looking like a...
Forget about eyes. If it's the whole thing looks like an animal, let's say. Rav Meir still considers it a baby. But Chachamim Omrim, the Chachamim say no. Ad shehemem esuras adam. It's only considered a baby for either pidyon aben or nachla, only if it has suras adam. If it doesn't have suras adam, then the baby after it is not potter from pidyon aben. It needs pidyon aben. And the mission
has suras adam.
Right. If it has suras adam, then. Vaham apella sandal. What about if the woman miscarries a sandal? We're going to talk about later on in the parak. A sandal is a sandal is like the word sandal in English. It means a flattened baby. Later on in the parak, we're going to talk a couple of blocks. We're going to talk about sometimes you have twins in the womb where one of them ends up growing at the expense of the other one, and the other one ends up getting flattened out. So it comes out looking like a sandal, looking like a sole of a sandal, or like a fish called sandal. Anyway. So if a woman miscarries a sandal, oishulya, or a placenta, even though there was no baby with it, oishvir merukam, or a shvir, which is the first stage of an embryo's formation when it looks for a little while like a tube, merukam, whereas it has a basic shape of a human being, but in miniature, it's not clearly delineated, the limbs are not clearly delineated, but you can start telling that it has a human shape. Or if the baby came out from the womb piece by piece, all of those are ba'achar b'chor l'nachla v'ein b'chor l'koyin. Any baby, the next baby born after that is a b'chor as far as getting the double portion, but not a b'chor as far as pidyon aben, because there was already peter rechem.
That's even a chachamim.
That's a chachamim. I'm saying that.
I'm going to kind of say it comes the.
If you have a pshulia or what have you, a sandal or whatever that came out, and then another baby came out, that other baby does get the double portion because the sandal or pshulia or what have you is not a live baby, but nevertheless, he's not a b'chor l'koyin because it was already petereth. So the point is, the isakadaisak techaye. Now, if you're going to say that Rav Meir would hold that a creature like that was born like a behema chaye ba'oy could actually live, haba'achar b'chor l'nachla mihavi, how could Rav Meir be saying that the baby born after it would be a b'chor l'nachla? As long as the baby was able to live at least 30 days, then it's the b'chor l'nachla, and if it dies, then its brothers or its father or whoever inherited. So that proves that a mayor holds that even though such a baby is born, it's not going to live very long. He calls it Vlad Malia, a full-fledged baby insofar as the dinim of birth, but not insofar as the dinim of nachla. Amar Rava says that's not a solid proof. La olam dechaye, maybe actually the mayor would hold that conceivably such a baby could live long, a malformed baby like that. Maybe it could live for a certain amount of time, but the shiny hosim is different in that case. Rav Meir will still not consider it a b'chor l'nachla, because when it comes to the nachla, when it comes to the double portion, the pasuk uses the expression that the firstborn is reishis oinai, the first of its strength. Which is the word oinai means, no, the word oinai means strength, but also the word oinai is malosh, the word, Torah could use a different word, use koichai or whatever. Oinai also means maloshin aninus, maloshin mourning. So it means Misha Libai Dava Olav. What kind of baby is considered a Bechor L'Nachla? The kind where the father would naturally, where the parents would naturally feel bad and mourn for their death. That's considered a baby that has significance as far as the dinim of Nachla, which is not our case here. Yafta Zeh, Shein Libai Dava Olav. In this case, the father doesn't feel so Dava on him. The baby doesn't even look like a normal baby. It looks like an animal or whatever. Therefore, the father doesn't feel chaninus, and therefore, a mayor would say that therefore it's not considered a baby as far as Nachla. And therefore, the next baby after it is the Bechor as far as Nachla. Okay. Fine. Last thing, Bominate of Adama Abame Abaya, Lid of Mayor, Dama Behema of Meisha Vlad Malyu. Let's ask another question. We're saying that according to Rav Meir, a behema shaped animal that was born from a woman is considered a real baby. What about the other way around? Adam Bimhe Behema Mai. What about the other way around? What if you have an animal gives birth to a human shaped baby? The question is, Lamai Nafkamina, what's the practical difference? It's an animal either way. The answer is, the question would be, would you be able to shech that baby and eat it? If you say it's considered an animal, then of course, even though it's shaped like a human, then you could. If not, then not. So the question is, why can't we answer that on the basis of what Rabbi Yechanan says? The Amr Rabbi Yechanan, we Rabbi Yechanan says in a Gemara in Chulin, if a person shechts an animal and finds a baby inside the womb shaped like a dove, asura ba'achila, then it's also to eat. Because the whole concept that you're allowed to eat an unborn animal that you find in the womb only applies to an animal. So in that case, we say if it's shaped like a bird, then not. Well, in this case, it's shaped like a human, so also not. And the answer is
Jamus
Yona, the image of a bird. Yeah.
So therefore,
it's also, it's about the same token, but Pashto is a human being. It doesn't look like an animal either. So the Gemara says, no. Hochi Hashta, how do you think to compare the cases? Hossam, like paus sois ika, like paus soika. So you have like this. The Torah tells us that you're allowed to eat kosher animals. The Torah also tells us, kol mafretes parsa, any creature that has a parsa, ba behema, in animals, techelu, you can eat. And we learned in Cholin, the word babahema, that's where we learn the concept that you're allowed to eat the unborn animal that was found in the womb. Babahema, what you find inside the animal. So fine, the word parsa means that it has to have a sole of the foot. So fine, it doesn't necessarily have to have split hooves. We said over there that even if you have, and we talked about in Cholin, we talked about in Bechoris, that you can have a mutant animal that's born. It's born from a kosher mother and father. But for whatever reason, it doesn't have split hooves like normal. It has its hooves are joined together, like a horse's or whatever. So we said, fine, the Torah tells us you're allowed to eat it anyway, because at least it may not have parsa, but at least it has parsa. It has a sole of the foot. But the difference is, parsa means the sole of a foot. Yeah, it means even if it's not split. So awesome, when it comes to a bird shape, loy prosois ika, loy prosa ika. There's no prosois in the plural when it comes to a bird because there's no split hooves. But like parasa ika, there's not even a sole of a foot because the bird doesn't have a foot that's shaped like that at all. Haka, but over here with a human-shaped baby, nehida parasois like. Granted, there's no split hooves because people don't have split hooves. Parasa mia ika, but at least you have a sole of a foot. That you can say, therefore, is parasa. It's no different than, let's say, if it was a sheep-shaped animal that had unsplit hooves, where it would definitely be mutter. It's called kolut. We learned about it in. So
that's for an animal.
No, so that's the point. In other words, so over here, yes, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that if the creature is shaped like a bird, it's also. But you could say the reason for that is because birds have no parasa at all. So therefore, the whole passage that's saying mafresis parasa babahema won't apply. But over here, where the baby is shaped like a human being, it has a parasa. Fine, it doesn't have prosa, it doesn't have a split hooves, but it has a parasa, so maybe it should be mutter. Okay, the Gemara leaves it unresolved. I mean, it's not negeya la halacha anyway, because again, the question is only according to the mayor of our Mishnah. The halacha is not like a mayor anyway. The halacha is like a chachamim, that if the baby is not shaped like a human, if the baby doesn't have the face of a human being, then it's not considered a... Then, yeah.
So
according to the mayor, if it had a parasa, maybe it would be mutter, maybe not. We're not sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Sure.